afternoon. How are you? Pippa Quelch with you. BBC Radio Devon this Thursday afternoon. Thanks to Fitz for a great show today. Tom Grennan there, and here you're listening to BBC Radio Devon. It's Pippa with you. Thursday afternoon, a bit miserable out there, but well, hopefully this will give you some inspiration to get out and do something in your garden or maybe somewhere else. This is described as the act of gardening on land that the gardeners don't have the legal rights to cultivate, places like abandoned sites or maybe public land. The gardeners have no permission, but they do have a mission, a very positive one, to improve the environment or to produce vegetables or flowers for everyone to use and enjoy. Perhaps the UK's best known guerrilla gardener, Richard Reynolds, has inspired thousands of people to take up their trowels and to make their communities more attractive. He's particularly known for his work in London, but he has very strong links with Devon. I've just been finding out about them, and he's with me in the studio now. Richard, welcome along.
Hello, Pippa. Lovely to be here.
Well, it's lovely to meet you at last. We've spoken before. This was probably about 10 years ago about some of your amazing projects. You were based in London then, and you've just been telling me your connection with Devon.
Yes, I've come home. I'm born and bred and educated in Devon, and finally escaped from London in 2018. So, yes, back here with the kids and my wife. It's wonderful.
Fabulous. But you've just told me that even though you had in London a flat with no garden, not even a balcony, nothing like that, the same here in Devon.
Yes, we've moved from the grime of Elephant and Castle to Castle Street, central Totnes, with nothing. I mean, there's one windowsill I can put a flower box on, and that's it. There's no garden. It was a sort of mistake, really. So the motivations are exactly the same. I love gardening, and I look for opportunities in public space.
Well, I love the fact that, you know, I've read up a little bit about you, and you've always said that the middle of the road is your garden, basically.
Yes.
And you treat it here in Devon the same? You were just telling me about the first thing that you planted here.
Well, that's it, yeah. The first thing after moving here was just a little bit of loose tarmac. Not quite the middle of the road. That'd be going too far, but there was already some weeds. So weeds are a good sign. And I just eased it out a bit and put in a beautiful Virginia creeper that actually was given to me by pretty much a passerby. She said, oh, you know, I can see you want to do something. So it's thriving. And I've gradually inched further beyond along the street and beyond and around the town. Yes.
I love this idea. Virginia creepers are just beautiful. I was just telling you that they mean an awful lot to me because my late mum gave me one, and it's pretty. Because that's the thing. You must, whenever you go travelling now and you go to places that you've worked, you must see things that are really thriving.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yes. So I first became a guerrilla gardener back in 2004, and I still have a connection to the Elephant and Castle, and those plants, some of the trees, the cherries that I planted with my children, now thriving, bearing fruit. I mean, yeah, trees are the most satisfying, and I've continued to plant them. But the gardens, some of them are self-sufficient, some of them continue to thrive with other people who have adopted them and taken them on, and then they make their mark as well. So it works even if you move on.
I remember talking to you when you were in London, and we were talking about a little project that you had going with your gran in Totnes.
Yes.
You got your gran out there,
yes,
guerrilla gardening.
Yes, well, she had a reputation as a guerrilla litter picker.
Right.
She's very, you know, proud and keen to make a difference.
Sure.
It runs in the family. And so she was out and about sort of tidying up Vere Island. And so it was an easy step, really, to say, you know, pick up a trowel. And we tidied up a little triangle by the old bridge there, which has since been adopted, because she's passed away. It's been adopted by a wonderful group in Totnes, the Totnes Gardens Group, who are legit, but kindred spirits.
You say legit, and I really want to get into this. Can we go way back? You weren't the first guerrilla gardener.
No,
this has been
happening
for some time, hasn't it?
Well, it goes back hundreds of years, really. I wrote a book about it back in 2008, which charts the history. I mean, even references in the Bible to people sowing weeds in other people's arable fields. But the term goes back to the early 70s, to New York, where the green guerrillas were seeing abandoned lots, the neglect, you know, it was depopulating at the time. So there's a lot of opportunity, and they took over these bits of land and gradually transformed them, and gradually also got legitimate permission. But it took decades.
So it started really as something they did off their own back. Just the definition, and I mentioned it there. This is working on land that the gardeners don't have the legal rights to cultivate.
Yes.
But do you encounter? I'm just wondering your first mission when you first went out. You did this under cover of night.
Well,
didn't
this
you?
Is it. Yes. So when I first did it in 2004, I was very anxious, didn't want to be seen. So rather like local guerrilla gardener comrade Richard Bingley, thought that if I did it at the cover of darkness, no one would see and I wouldn't get in trouble. But actually, that kind of stealth-like operation ends up in a mess, really, mm-hmm. because it's better to be doing that where you can actually chat to passers-by, listen to what they think as well, if they're interested, and actually be more part of the community. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't need to be as stealth-like as I originally realised. It's better if it's very familiar to you, so you know it's neglected, no one's got an interest in it, and gradually, rather than overnight, rapid transformation, as we saw in Plymouth, bit by bit, sound people out, see how it goes. Don't bite off more than you can chew as well, because sometimes the ambition of a gardener can get in the way and you end up with what becomes a burden, and a very public burden. So, yeah, in the evening when people are out and about.
Maybe an hour at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
Change.
Really simple. Little tree pits in the street, you know, where there's a bit of room where perhaps the soil's got a bit compacted, but there's a few weeds growing, sort of lightly digging that over, adding something. Nothing too big that would compete with the tree.
And this is and the then you've got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, you've got it bit by bit by bit, and trial and error. And what's been amazing is the people you meet when you're out there doing it, who've also got wisdom to share and sometimes plants to share. It evolves.
I say you've got to know what you're doing, because you can, there are certain things, you know, invasive plants that you've got to be very careful not to put in the wrong place, haven't you?
Yes, absolutely. Like in any garden. I mean, the advantage of some of these locations, if they're a big concrete planter, is that the opportunity for something really invasive that spreads by roots is limited. It is literally constrained. Yeah. And some of these tougher plants are actually quite well suited, but common sense is really important with this.
When you first started, what was the thinking behind it? You just wanted to make things a little bit lovelier?
Oh, it was love of gardening. So I as I said, I grew up down here and gardened as a teenager and as a child, and sometimes as a job as a teenager as well. So I missed that and had chosen a high-rise flat without a garden, because gardening at the time didn't seem like a big decision. But to de-stress from work, to lift the spirits as I walked into the block and as others walked into the block, the opportunity was just too good to miss. These giant planters full of weeds and overgrown shrubs, and bit by bit transformed it.
And how do you pick your sites? Do you take into account, the fact that obviously it's going to be owned by someone else, is that part of the thinking?
So my preference is obviously public. Mm-hmm. So the likelihood is it's a local authority or like a housing association or a council housing. In this case, it was social housing land. Those organisations are generally pretty stretched, and much as they would love to be on top of all their gardens, they're not. Plymouth, perhaps, complicated situation. Sometimes they throw a lot of money at it, but generally it's under stress. So the neglect is there. That's a good starting point. And then, as I said, if it's super local to you, if you're familiar with it and you can sort of read the landscape and you can see what's been going on over at least a few months, if not longer, then also the chances that you can effectively adopt it are more realistic. Mm. And of course, you can get the pleasure from seeing it transform and stay on top of it. It doesn't become a sort of, you know, a mission. Mm. So when I was doing it back in Totnes years ago, I did it because, you know, local, my grandmother was there to be able to continue looking after
sure.
it.
Yes, yeah. keep an eye on things. In the early days, I'm just trying to think back in 2004, it must have been quite a novelty seeing it out and about in London. And I know that you said you started doing it at night illicitly, but then sort of started doing it a bit more publicly. Were there any repercussions? I know that you had a little bit of a brush with the police, didn't you?
Yeah, a few times, yes. And as you said, it was unexpected. So there was generally misunderstandings were at the cause of these altercations. There was a report that I was stealing, and they turned up. Said, yeah. Someone said, "You're stealing stuff," and I showed them my tub of dandelions, and they laughed and let me get on. On another occasion, I was driving somewhere with a carload of wood chip, and that was pretty serious. That was searched under the Prevention of Terrorism Act because right. they thought I was a bomber.
Yeah.
So that was awkward, but quite interesting. And thankfully, at the end of the day, they just, you know, let me get on with it.
So you've never been prosecuted?
No, no, no. I was only threatened with arrest once. And I think that was partly because there was a camera there from the Guardian newspaper. So I think the police felt a bit under pressure to sort of go the full process. So I said, well, I'll stop. Which I did, and then went back an hour later and carried on.
There's a tip there, isn't it? Don't wear a balaclava and do it at night.
well, this is it. It was later in the evening, and actually, sure. like in Plymouth, our problem then, I think, was that the police didn't totally believe us either, because we were clearing weeds, we were digging on the middle of the Elephant and Castle roundabout, as it was at the time, and we had no plants, no planting material with us. Mm. That was all sort of just over the road to bring over once we'd done the first part of the job. So my tip is also, ideally have something that really shows your intent is very clear if anyone is unsure, so that you can say, no, I really am just, I'm a volunteer gardener. And there's nothing else going on here. It's a very, very, it's not, yeah, it's a gentlest form of protest, yeah. frankly.
A lot of this will be council land. Have you communicated with the councils? What have they
Well, it's sort of an arm's length thing. Yes, I have at various levels locally. And I don't want to really get into it. I'd say it's a bit disappointing, I was a bit surprised. So I have a sort of arm's length relationship where the organisation I mentioned earlier, they get a bit of funding and then from the council, you see, and then they pass that on to me as a bit like sort of Virgin Islands and tax havens and things. It's a complicated web of financial transfers. But it ends up that I can buy a few bags of compost and strulch. It just goes towards what is effectively self-funded or from donations from the residents of the street who have spare bulbs and plants that are in tubs that need a bit more space.
I've noticed this on allotments. Everyone's got something that they can pass on to someone else, and that's what the gardening community's like, isn't it? There's a lot of sharing that goes on. So is that how you decide what goes where? It's what you've got available? Yeah,
that's a really good question. What it isn't is kind of grand designs, transformations, because, as I said, it would be a risk of digging over too much at once and also a great cost. So the gardens evolve depending on what ends up being donated or what's going cheap at the end of the season in a garden centre or what perhaps it's time to divide and spread out. And that is part of the fun. There is a camellia that's in the garden that was in a tub in Stoke in my mother's back garden. She'd bought that in memory of her brother who'd passed away. That now thrives in Totnes, where he lived for many years. A lot of these plants have different stories. I've got a Valentine's rose that I was given, Munstead wood, a beautiful David Austin rose. Lots of these have little stories behind them. And I share them with those who chat to me while I garden.
We've got loads more to talk about. You're all right for time, aren't
yes,
you? You don't
yes,
have to I'm dash off. No, lovely. No. We're going to have a tune and then we're right back talking to Richard Reynolds, Guerrilla Gardener. If you've got any questions or anything to share perhaps in your community, we'd love to hear about it today. 0808 100 1034 or you could always text 81333 putting Devon at the start of your message.
If you are making music in the Southwest, BBC Music Introducing wants to hear from you. It's work for some of the biggest names in music. Just search BBC Music Introducing Uploader and tell us who you are. George Ezra did, and look what happened to him.
Sure enough, a week later they were playing it and then, you know, inviting me down to London to do bits, and I appreciate those guys a lot.
And it could work for you. Send us the music you are recording, producing and performing in the Southwest, and you could be getting played on the radio on Saturday nights across the Southwest. BBC Music Introducing every Saturday night on BBC Radio Devon and anytime you like on BBC Sounds.
Discussion in the studio this afternoon. Richard Reynolds is with us, Guerrilla Gardener. You may well have read his book. You may have seen his blog. You've got a regular blog, haven't you?
Well, it was regular once. It's very neglected.
Come on, keep up.
It's a bit weedy. I put my time into the gardening these days and have pretty much backed off most digital presence, except a tweet, as Richard underscore 001.
And you've done lots of talks, haven't you, around the country on this?
Yes, yes. I'm off to Korea at the end of April. Yeah, no, the invites still come to spread the word. My book was available in Korea, you see, a few years ago, so I have a sort of following over there.
And they
it's quite bizarre.
Guerrilla gardening all over the world, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's, of course, I mean, as gardeners exist globally, so the opportunity to do it as a guerrilla does.
I've had a few questions and comments coming in. Mark in Kingstainton's got in touch and he says, our friends in Brixton in South London have engaged with their local council, this is Lambeth, to develop a guerrilla garden. The council have been most supportive and parakeets are in the cherry tree that was planted a decade or so ago.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Lambeth Council and they're a really good example of someone who facilitates. So they will respond to suggestions from locals to improve their street and make that possible and make funds available. They are really good. And local authorities are changing, particularly in more urban areas, that they realise that the passion of local people about how they want to shape their public realm is worth channeling and working together rather than imposing grand designs from above.
You've already touched on it slightly. Speaking of local councils and plans, what's happened in Plymouth City Centre with the trees that came down? You must have thoughts on that.
Yeah, it is tragic, but I think there's a culture in Plymouth, probably goes back to the 1940s, of the clean slate, let's start again, chuck out the chintz, and in comes the new design that's the latest fashion. So there are endless redesigns going on as Plymouthians perhaps think, you know, we need to really think big. I think that's a mistake. Cities should evolve gradually and be constantly open to change. And what should have happened here was that the design should have incorporated more of the greenery that was planted, I think, back in the 80s.
So more of an organic process.
Yeah, more gradual. So I understand some of the trees were damaged, some of them were pushing up the pavement, but that doesn't mean that all of them had to go. I know that a few were going to be saved and a few thankfully have been, but I think that the new design was too radical a transformation, and I think that's a cultural problem, particularly in a city like Plymouth that has been rebuilt and redesigned a lot since the bombing.
So if you were advising the council now, if you could have a blank piece of paper and sort of, you know, create this wonderful space in the city centre, what would you be doing?
Two things. Don't rush. Just because there's some funding available, don't rush these projects. I mean, that is not how any redevelopment should be done. Also, be flexible to what the design should now be. There's been the injunction. Reconsider how it could work. And also, given the groundswell of enthusiasm to shape it, be a bit more pioneering of working with local people in allowing that landscape to evolve, like has been happening in Lambeth in London, like has been happening in Leiden in the Netherlands. Create spaces that can gradually be adopted, whether it's by local businesses or local people, and accept that slight sense of unexpectedness, that slight sense of chaos. This top-down, you know, grand plan, master plan, it never works because there's never the budget to sustain that perfection that looks so beautiful in a CGI image that's sold to the, you know, to the public.
I guess there's a lesson to be learned that the strength of public feeling on this in recent days and weeks, you know, is really clear. And I should imagine there's a whole army of people who would be very keen to lend perhaps volunteering effort, just as
I would have hoped so. I mean, this is it. Trees are absolutely crucial and critical to our future. And when they've matured, that resource needs to be kept. That seems to have been missing from the design. And I would hope that the passion that's out there can channel this into something that is really, you know, pioneering and inspiring to other places around the country.
You're an author, as we say, you've done blogs, you speak a lot. Are you finding that since you really started, we're more receptive, more aware of the idea of rewilding and looking after spaces?
Absolutely, yes. One of the reasons I've always enjoyed sharing my stories, is to try and normalise that sense that we are responsible. We are collectively responsible. Now, that could just be for the pavement outside your house. But if you start taking responsibility for that, then it feels more natural and comfortable to take responsibility for bigger geographical spaces and ultimately the world, rather than feeling, I'll leave that to someone else. I don't have permission. What I've proved is you don't need permission to make those differences.
I wonder whether, though, if, perhaps there are beginners wondering how to start doing this kind of thing. Should we seek permission? Would it be advisable to?
Well, what I've heard from many people who write to me is that those who have sought permission, it can go wrong. So there are going to be situations where that is the right thing to do. But for these marginal scraps of land that are clearly neglected, what I have found as an effective strategy and what I've found from others is an effective strategy is make a start, show your passion, show your skill, and permission may fall into place along the line. Whether that's a wink and a nod, or whether that's actually an official agreement, that can happen along the way. And that works for you as well, because then you know you actually want to do it, rather than having to make a theoretical commitment and take on responsibility for something that actually you might lose interest in. So I've got permission in several places, both in London and I feel in Totnes as well. South Hams have given permission indirectly to me for some of the locations I look after. And it works for everyone.
And as you say, don't take a bulldozer. Just do it gradually,
yes,
bit by bit,
yes,
slowly, and just start letting the community appreciate it.
Exactly.
That's the key thing. Right, we've got a question come in here. This is from, let me just check, it's Ian in Torbados. Hi, Ian. He says, I live on an estate with a grass verge running along the roadside, which has the odd tree. What would Richard suggest this type of area could be? Could it be a guerrilla gardening place, and what should go on it?
Yeah, so I'd say there's two approaches. So the really simple approach is autumn planting of bulbs. I mean, that's really simple, really obvious. It's one-off and that will work. I mean, a lot of people do that legitimately.
And bulbs we're talking
about? Yeah, daffodils. Okay. Daffodils would be the obvious one because they will have done their bit before the mower man comes
yes,
along. And that's the big challenge. Anyone gardening in an area of lawn, effectively, however shaggy it is, whatever you do that is vulnerable to those occasional hackings. Now, I know South Hams, for example, are doing much less of that to enable plants to bloom and for the pollinators and also to save money as well. And that's good, but that also can swamp what you do. So if you're going to be more of a gardener rather than just that one-off bulb planter, you need to clearly demarcate your patch. There's a few ways that can be done, but one is just to be rigorous about an edge where you've removed the turf. So I would suggest a small area, but very clearly demarcated, that a mowman can then easily go around. You don't want to make their job any more difficult at all. I've heard stories of people adding wildflowers into it, or a little tree sapling or whatever. That is too vulnerable. You have to actually do something really obvious. So it is quite a border. Yes,
yeah.
Even a little raised bed, a little bit of timber, just something.
Pebbles or
no? I think be careful with that, because strimmers and the like can throw those around. So just something that is really, really clear to whoever the contractor might be. There's a patch I've done in Totnes. It's actually a memorial. It's a memorial to the coronation. And it was moved at some point, I think, in the 70s when the road was changed. And it says this garden was laid out to commemorate the coronation. But there really wasn't much of a garden there at all. It was so embarrassing. There was the remains, a sort of hollow, like a Neolithic sort of burial ground, a sort of hollows in the turf of what once would have been there. So I re-established that with a really crisp, nice edge. And actually, because I wasn't totally confident that the contractors would mow properly. I actually take my battery-powered lawnmower out in the summer and just mow the section around that. So as the shaggy, you know, meadow grasses grow up around it, there's just that verge, a lawnmower wide, for the Jerusalem sage, hyacinths, regular salvia, nasturtiums, lacanthemums. They all thrive now in this bed, and you know, respectful to Her Majesty.
I'm just imagining when you go for a day out with your family, it must be a nightmare for them because you're like, look, I'm just going to stop here and just do a little bit of mowing.
Well, yeah, I sort of integrated into it. They're all very supportive.
Oh,
and
good, they're into it
too.
Yeah,
oh yes. For the Jubilee last year, we planted a tree and I had the loudspeaker with the national anthem and it had to be in February, the day when, you know, she was initially announced as queen. That's a whole other story, actually. Maybe I shouldn't have gone there. I shouldn't have disclosed that. That no one knows about that. I didn't put it on the blog or on Twitter, but now it's out there.
It's an exclusive for Radio Devon. Planting trees is another thing. I mean, my husband and I just love, if we can, getting hold of a tree and planting it, friends' places, you know, any large sort of areas, maybe a farm that's looking for it. So that's something you'd encourage?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Because you've got very green credentials. Clearly, it's very close to your heart.
I mean, just the thing with trees is sight lines. Don't want to cause any reason for complaint that the tree is going to be some kind of obstruction, and that's all. Yeah.
There are calendar events I know that people might want to get involved in. I think there's one coming up, isn't there, about sunflowers?
Well, yes, International Sunflower Guerrilla Gardening Day since 2006 is on May the 1st. I will actually be in Seoul, in Korea, on that day. So I need to figure out quite how I'll participate.
They grow sunflowers well?
I think so. I think so. The climate's a bit warmer than ours, but it's still... I've been once before. It's fairly similar, yeah.
And this is the idea. You take some sunflower seeds out and...
Yes.
Sow them.
Yes,
Neglected public spaces? Like
yes, I mean, do a little bit of digging, scratching around in some open soil. But you know what, actually, get started earlier. May the 1st, these days, spring can be pretty dry. So I've been known to get sowing well into, you know, early April, late March, it's fine.
There are groups that have sprung up across the UK, inspired by you. That must give you a sense of pride. Are they still going?
Yes, groups thrive, they wax and wane. People hear about it for the first time, as some of your listeners might be today. Other people do it for a period and then it doesn't, you know, doesn't suit their lifestyle. It is really satisfying to see not only how people have been inspired, but then how they do it their own way. Whatever, you know, is their passion, whether it's planting redwoods. I remember hearing from a man that's his thing, planting redwoods all over the place. They're going to be an amazing contribution to the landscape in due course. Edibles, some people, for them, that's their passion. I'm more into the beautification. So, yes, it's like seeds. It pops up and thrives in all sorts of places.
You're right, the fruit and veg. I mean, everyone can share that then, can't it?
Well, yes. The famous, the incredible edibles of Todmorden. I visited them a while ago. And, yes, it's visionary in some ways, though it felt like a bit of a race to harvest first. So I think with edibles in Guerrilla Garden, it gets a bit complicated sometimes as to who gets to eat. It's a bit competitive. So what I have is a huge terracotta tub that is away from the dogs, and that's full of herbs. And I think herbs are a much simpler way to share. And people pop out with their scissors and harvest that in our street.
I love this. I mean, it's so positive, isn't it? And that's the key thing, isn't it? It's doing something positive for the environment and for other people. Mm. And that's what I know you're passionate about. The book is still out there if people want to get hold of it.
Yeah, it's still available. It's a very reasonable price on some online resellers these days. I would recommend a second-hand copy.
And that would actually then, get people started if they wanted to.
Yes,
it's
got everything in it. Yes, it's the history and then the how-to. So packed packed full of inspirational stories from around the world. And if you track down the hardback, it's got loads of lovely, colourful pictures as well.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
You got your eye on anything in Devon that you're working on now? Is there anything you can tell us about?
Well, I was out this morning, actually. I was gardening at a neighbour's and tidying up a patch in North Street car park because he had some old soil that was no good for his tub, so I spread that out there. It's going well. And I found a £2 coin lying by the side of the road.
Will that be invested?
Which will be reinvested. Okay. That's a few seeds, nearly. It's a nice moment when you find treasures. That's another perk.
A full-time job for you, aren't
it? No, it's not. It's just an obsession.
Richard, I've loved chatting to you. Thank you. And maybe we can chat again. If you've got any interesting projects, we want to know about them. All right. But thank you so much for coming
in.
And I'll direct everyone to your website. It's gorillagardening.org. That's Richard Reynolds. Look out for his book. And maybe you're feeling inspired.